Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Baba comes home late. He is drunk. The house is locked and sleeping. Unable to find his key, he kicks in the front door and calls for my mother. I want something to eat. His voice peaks, sharp as a piece of shale. In the next room, my mother isn't game to move. It's chilly. And besides, she's scared he'll smack her again. Come down and do your duty, he persists. I'm your husband, and I want something to eat. If you were any sort of wife, you'd come down and do what I tell you. His voice ebbs and flows. He trips and falls over something, swears. Keep it down, she tells him from the landing. You'll wake the children. She descends the stairs. The kitchen is directly beneath the bedroom. Their voices rise as if the crossbeams and the floorboards do not exist. Mama busies herself at the pot. She heats the tarhana soup and puts a bowl and spoon on the table. Not a word passes their lips. At least she's learnt to leave him alone when he's in this state. But she can't let it be. While he eats, she begins to berate him. What do you call this? Drunk again? You've just come back from the sea. Your children haven't seen you. I haven't seen you. Coming home in the middle of the night, drunk. Let it go, wife, he replies. In the name of God, let it go. May the devil take you. You're no better. I pray that she will leave it at that. A woman ought to know when to stop. Instead, she keeps pecking at him. He continues eating his soup, the spoon chiming as it hits the side of the bowl. Peck, 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 my mother goes on at my father's head. Next, she'll peck on his manhood. I said, he calls out, let it go. When my father wants to, he has a very loud voice. It booms like a cannon out of his thin chest. Electra is awake beside me. I can see her eyes gleaming anxiously in the dark. She takes my hand. The bowl of soup smashes against the far wall. My mother lets out a surprised yelp. A chair clatters to the floor. He hits her. The sound rises through the floorboards as if it's got wings. Another slap. There's no sound of struggle. I picture her lying beneath him, taking it as it comes. You think you're better than us, he says. You think you're a lily in the shit of the world, is that it? You think we're not good enough for you? Well, you're no better. You're like the rest of us, so cut the crap. Silence. The wind whistles outside the window. A tile slips from the roof and smashes on the cobbles, making a far-off and lonely sound. And what shit have you been feeding your son about having a brother? What's that about? My heart stops beating. This time my mother makes a wounded animal noise. He pummels her again. After that, things quieten down. She cleans up the mess. They talk in whispers. Later, they gently shut the door to their bedroom and sleep on the same roll-out mattress. I fall asleep, still holding Electra's tiny paw. In the morning, come here, she says. It's just the two of us. Electra's left for school with cousin Evangelia. Now that the fishing season is over, Baba's gone to scratch for work at the Costeraa winery. Come here. Those two words freeze my blood. I'm at the table finishing breakfast. She's standing over me, hands on flared hips. Why did you tell him? Didn't we say it's our secret? I whisper, I don't know, Mama. Her eyes shine, a savage crow. What do you mean you don't know? Did we say it between us or didn't we? I'm not like her. I can't be tough. I start sniffling. That's her cube. Her right hand flies back and away from her hip, high up in the air. I'll show you how to keep secrets, she utters. The hand flies down again, a great swoop like a scythe, and connects with the side of my face. My cheek stings and my ears ring. The hand completes a half circle across her body and flies back again. This time, the back of her hand connects with my mouth. Her wedding band cuts my lip and strikes my teeth with a sickening crunch. Now go to school, she says, turning her back. Stop sniffling, cry baby. It's the day of the Epiphany in January. A new year has begun. Greeks line the harbour front from one end to the other, while curious Turks cling to the fortress battlements, watching the show that's about to begin. It's so cold, I swear nothing will ever warm me again. The sea is grey steel that moves in a piece. There are no seagulls, only a hollow boom and a shriek in the sky. People cluster together, waiting for the priest to arrive. He will bless the waters and expel the Kalikanjari. I'm scared of Kalikanjari. They're goblins. From Christmas Eve to Epiphany, they hide in dark corners, snatching children and kidnapping the unfaithful. Only the priest's magic can cast them out. My mother and father stand side by side. Electra huddles in the gully between their legs. Seeing my mother with her hand through the crook of my father's arm, you'd never know they're constantly at war. In her fawn coat, she is a picture of elegance. She has no equal. Her hair is covered with a flowered scarf, and brown leather gloves sheathe her hands. My eyes are glued on Zotico. He's standing in the rowboat, wearing nothing but sopping bathers and a sleeveless black vest that is plastered to his torso. His eyes are like searchlights, scanning the crowd. He's probably trying to locate Iphigenia. I don't know why they don't just declare their love and get it over and done with. I mean, it's not like nobody knows that they use me as a go-between, carrying love notes back and forth. Some people would pay a hefty amount to read one of those letters. But I'll tell you one thing, they're boring as batshit. Not an ounce of poetry in them, purely directive. Dear Iphigenia, please sit at your bedroom window at such and such time so that I can gaze on your dusky beauty from the fortress battlements, that kind of thing. See what I mean? Unimaginative. The priest finally arrives, surrounded by acolytes and choir boys. The big man's crimson and golden robes swirl around his body, making him look like a collection of rags, eager to take off and fly to heaven. As he chants, another group of half-naked youths are rowed out to join Zotico in the boat. He tries to intimidate them with his black eyes, but they're too cold to notice. Finally, the priest flings the last lines of the liturgy into the wind. When the words are dashed against the wall behind him, he throws the cross into the water. It sinks beneath the waves. Six young men throw their bodies into the air. They slice through the water, their white flesh rippling beneath the swirling froth. Then they too vanish. The water claims them for minutes on end. It is Zotico who bursts to the surface, gasping and holding the cross aloft. The crowd erupts into jubilant cries. He is clearly the favourite. Zotico locks eyes with Iphigenia and kisses Jesus' cold lips with all the passion he can master. Then he raises the cross over his head again. Iphigenia can't contain her joy. She cheers and claps. Her sister elbows her in the ribs, and Iphigenia goes quiet. I would have shoved her in the drink, then we'd see whose side God is on. It has been snowing non-stop for almost a week. We haven't been to school in a fortnight. The coal to heat the classrooms ran out, and the schoolyard was under several feet of snow. A couple of kids fell into snowdrifts and they had to be dug out by the janitor. After that, classes were dismissed and, as the days passed, heaving white mounds slowly devoured the houses. "There is more to come," says Mama's radio. My mother finally snaps. "Go to your grandmother's. Get out of my hair," she yells. "I'm sick of you." She's been stuck in the house with Electra and me for weeks, and she's going stir crazy. I slink out with my tail between my legs, leaving Electra at the mercy of the madwoman who claims to be our mother. Scrunched down in my coat, I take a right turn at the corner and head for my grandmother's hotel. On the way, I have to pass Hassan's house. He's a Turkish kid who lives with his mother and policeman father in a house behind the Talay winery. I usually avoid going this way, but in this weather, I figure no one's going to be outside. I'm wrong. As soon as I turn the corner, I spot Hassan. He is crouched in the snow, building a snowman. He looks up when he hears the snow squeaking. A flash of recognition lights up his oval face, and he rises to his feet. He stands stock still and stares. I'm tempted to turn tail and run, but I don't. I keep putting distance between us, one step at a time. Just as I think I've made it and I'm going to get away, he opens his mouth and says, "Hey, Gavur, infidel, where do you think you're going?" It's like he's uttered a magic spell. I freeze to the spot. "Do you think you can walk past my house as if you own it?" Hassan says. The word infidel, it goes in one ear, straight to my brain, and out the other ear. My temples begin to throb, my vision clouds. Hassan crouches again and digs with his left hand in the snow. He rises to his feet, clutching something. "This is a message for that dog you call a cousin," he says. "Tell him he's next." He throws whatever he's picked up. It's a snowball with a rock embedded in its center. It hits me on the forehead. I fall over backwards. Oddly enough, it doesn't hurt. I sit up in time to see a shadow loom from the doorway behind Hassan. A hand reaches out to grab him by the shoulder. And then I see that the hand is attached to an arm, and the arm is attached to Hassan's policeman father. The man is laughing so hard, his face splits in two. Our neighbour Eleni finds me wandering the streets and brings me home. She hands me over to my mother. "He's been beaten up again," she says. I tell Mama what happened. The minute the words are out of my mouth, she is rigid with fury. Her hands wipe themselves on her apron as if they don't belong to her. Then they rip the cloth from around her waist as if she is shearing off her skin. "That's it," she screams. "I've had it. I can't stand this anymore." The fingers clutch her hair as if she's going to rip it at the roots. Something's got to be done. She dashes out. "Galatea," Amya calls from next door. "Be careful. His father's a policeman. You're digging yourself into a hole you won't be able to get out of." Electra starts crying and runs to Amya. "Policeman, nothing," my mother yells. She's halfway along the street. "He can go to the devil. I'll show them. If the government isn't going to protect us, we have to look after ourselves. I'll be back in a minute." She has left without putting on a coat or changing out of her slippers. Because the front door is open, I can hear the neighbouring women trying to talk sense into her. "Galatea, don't do this, for heaven's sake. Galatea, stop in the name of God. Please think before you act. You'll get us all into trouble. You're making a bad thing worse for all of us. Stop and think before it's too late. Let the men handle it. That's what they're there for after all." For all the attention my mother pays them, their voices might as well be the twittering of birds.
listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.